This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
They have decided that they cannot get the amount of power they want in this country if Americans are the ones occupying this country.
They're not Democrat socialists, they're commies.
I think we'll be okay in the Senate because we have Nazi rapists dropping out of the race.
I grapple with this too, you know, because the harm that's being done, it's real, it's destructive, and it, as I said, it's irreversible. I think especially when you look at the medicalization side of things, when you've got kids or adults for that matter who are cutting off healthy, functioning body parts.
Before we get going on the foreigners and the Democrat Party and all the other wonderful things we have for you. First of all, as you can tell, we are back. It's been a long, long story. Flooded out studio. There's a lot of reasons why you haven't been seeing a fresh I'm Right every night. We are going to work hard to make sure you don't miss any more. So just know that's that. It also explains the background you see and why I look like I'm in an ISIS hostage video. That's one. Two, today, before we get into the foreigner stuff, it's the anniversary, the second anniversary of the attempted assassination of Donald Trump and the death of Corey Comparator, the brave gentleman who shielded his family and lost his life that day. You know, we always talk about that day as if, well, they almost got us. Well, they did get one of us that day. And it's a day that is dark for a variety of reasons, obviously. We're happy Donald Trump turned his head at the exact right moment. That's obviously a good thing. It's a dark day because it woke a lot of us up to what had already been a reality for some time. It woke us up to the fact that there are not an insignificant number of our fellow countrymen who want to kill us. This is the result of years, probably a decade, two decades worth of communist propaganda, Nazi, racist, fascist, these things drilled into the heads of Democrats in this country over and over and over and over again. And if you take a large enough group of people and speak that way to them over and over and over again, it just stands to reason that you are eventually going to trigger one of those people into doing something reprehensible. And yes, I know about the Steve Scalise shooting and everything else. I understand this has been a problem for quite some time, but it was the attempted assassination of Donald Trump that made not just you, but the normal American sit up in his chair a little bit and go, what? Are you serious right now? And the reality is this, and it's something we talked about before. I'm not going to dwell on it because we have other things to get to. The reality is that these things will happen again. And that, it saddens me a great deal. It saddens me that that's where we've come as a country, where we've programmed half the country to be violent and awful. But they will happen again. As you're sitting here watching I'm Right on the first, there is another loser, just like that loser in Butler, sitting there in his basement, consuming all kinds of Democrat poison on the news, Democrat politicians, podcasts, over and over and over again. And he decides he's going to be the good guy by picking up a weapon and going to kill somebody. Look, they've already assassinated Charlie Kirk, and you're not naive. You know that they'll kill more people. They will. And I wish we weren't here. I'm not going to sit here and celebrate this. This is a terrible place to be, but on this second anniversary of that dark day in Butler, Pennsylvania, I think it's important to sit up and acknowledge this is where we are. And I'm not exactly sure all the steps we need to take to go about it, but we desperately need to deprogram Democrats into being nonviolent. The violence has now run its way completely through the body politic of the Democrat Party. No, not all of them get up on a rooftop with a high-powered rifle and try to blow off Donald Trump's head. That's, of course, not true. But even down to the run-of-the-mill Democrat, the Democrat in your life, when that person feels they are in a safe environment around other Democrats, they speak about violence and joke about violence all the time. I have heard it because I have lived in Democrat areas. I hope he dies. I wish he would just die. It's too bad someone missed with that shot. This is how Democrats speak now. And that is an extremely scary, sad place to be as a country. So on the second anniversary of Butler, Pennsylvania, let's accept where we are and decide we're going to do what we can to change it. Now, I want to play you something. It's a montage of Democrats. And before I play it, I might as well just go ahead and lay out the whole purpose of this. We have to remember something. For a Democrat in the media, an elected Democrat, for an American communist, they have already made a decision on something. Whether you like it or I like it, whether you want to try to argue against it, the decision has already been made by them. And that decision is this. They have decided that they cannot get the amount of power they want in this country if Americans are the ones occupying this country. Born and bred Americans, poll after poll after poll after poll shows they reject Democrats. They reject the evils of communism. And so for the communists in the Democrat Party, it was a simple math equation. If Americans reject it, and I can go grab foreign barbarians by the million and bring them in here, and they will accept anything I do, well, then screw Americans. The Democrat Party. This is the official stance of the Democrat Party. Americans are evil. Foreigners will give me the power I want. That's why they say things like this.
We will not build a wall.
Walls don't work.
A racist and xenophobic wall.
We spent years investing in a faulty border wall that was never going to be an effective mechanism.
There will not be another foot of wall constructed in my administration.
It would waste taxpayer dollars on an ineffective wall. Again, an ineffective wall that can't even withstand heavy winds.
We know that walls don't work, that they don't stop drugs, that they don't stop migration.
A wall is an immorality. It's not who we are as a nation.
An immorality, you see. These are not all fringe people. This is the platform of one of the two major political parties, even an attempt to put up a physical barrier on the border that would keep foreigners out, they will loudly campaign against it. How sick and evil is the Democrat Party now? Did you see the story recently that New York, the state of New York, they knew that they were going to get ICE in there to go into their detention centers and deport illegals. Many of these guys were violent felons. Do you know what New York did? This is how evil your Democrat Party is now. They went down and opened up the jail cells and let the illegals out on the streets so ICE couldn't deport them. This is unbelievable, but it is where we are as a country. This is not a unique case. Did you see this story? Secretary of State Marco Rubio came out, talked about this.
Just weeks ago, a convicted sex offender and a foreign national was shielded from deportation by the governor of Minnesota. Laotian national Tu Li Vang was convicted of repeatedly sexually abusing a 10-year-old girl in the state of Minnesota. He even tried to pay his victim for her silence, and he called his heinous crimes a minor thing. Just days before this foreign sex offender was scheduled to be deported, Tim Walz, the governor, issued him a pardon, setting him free to once again endanger the children of America. Well, this week I revoked his legal status in the United States, and as a result, federal agents took him into custody. And as of today, he has been removed from the United States. Because of our action, this foreign criminal will never pose a threat to any American ever again. Americans must never be forced by their elected leaders to live alongside foreign sex criminals who have no right to begin with to reside in our country.
I'm happy Marco Rubio got rid of him. Democrats are so deeply evil. They took a guy who had been sexually abusing a 10-year-old girl and pardoned him and tried to shield him from deportation, parking him, if you're in Minnesota, right next to your daughter. The horrors, the evils of the Democrat Party are so amazing now that normal Americans, people who aren't political, I'm not talking about you or me, people who aren't political, when you tell them these things, they think you're lying. They think you're making up stories, but you're not making up stories. Allow me to introduce you to wonderful new American, Fahima Mahmoud.
5 months after she shut down her daycare, booked a flight to London, and was arrested by the FBI.
Ms. Mahmoud, are you here to plead guilty today?
50-year-old Fahima Mahmoud admits she committed daycare fraud. Running Future Leaders Early Learning Center on 36th and Chicago Avenue in Minneapolis since 2015, Mahmoud collected the most Child Care Assistance Program, or CCAP, money in the state last year at $3.7 million. In federal court while entering her plea, Mahmoud and her attorney specified that there were children attending her daycare and that she has receipts. But the government didn't accuse her of inflating attendance at her center during the swift investigation that followed the attention in Minnesota placed on daycare fraud. Instead, the FBI learned from families that Mahmoud did not charge them the required copay to receive CCAP money, which provided incentive for more families to sign up. By pleading guilty to conspiracy to defraud the United States, Mahmoud admits receiving $4.63 million in taxpayer money with that scheme.
Ms. Mahmoud, any comment? Are you going to be able to pay back any of the money?
That's not all. Mahmoud also admits taking part in the Feeding Our Future meal fraud scheme, claiming to serve up to 60,000 meals per month to needy kids out of her daycare, fraudulently collecting another $850,000. And court papers say she diverted much of those taxpayer funds to buy real estate and go toward her other companies, like this autism center, which has generated another $3.1 million in taxpayer reimbursements over the last 5 years.
There's no way that barbarian is able to pull off a scheme like that without the consent of the Democrat Party inside Minnesota. They're doing this on purpose. You see this story out of Los Angeles? Breitbart has a story out of Los Angeles. Food vendors, the foreigners, the ones that are run by illegals, they don't have all these different fees and things like that. If you are an American, they'll smash you into bits. You may accept it. You don't have to accept it, but you can accept it or not. The Democrat Party has already moved on. They've already left Americans behind. They are now the party exclusively of the foreigner. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have an amazing show for you tonight. Before we get to that, Pure Talk is amazing. Speaking of foreigners, do you have one of the big wireless companies? Who'd you talk to last time you had to dial up customer service? Pure Talk is so pro-America, they hire Americans. When you get on the phone with someone, anyone at Pure Talk, It'll be borderline alarming for you because it's not only an American who speaks English, they are pleasant and helpful. Not trying to run you off the phone, not looking at some checklist. My MetaChurch says, no more of that. Not a Pure Talk. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV and make the switch. Keep your phone, get a new phone. puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
And, you know, we have a unique responsibility to act from the heart of empire, the belly of the beast. The most important thing that we can do is take that empire down from within.
Our role ultimately is to facilitate our own empire's failure in ways that we can, ultimately to overthrow our own empire.
U.S. imperialism is not a thing that can be reformed away. It has to be overthrown through revolutionary struggle.
And to build a mass movement that can use the leverage of workers to hit the kill switch on American imperialism here within the American empire.
Joining me now, Ned Ryan, executive producer of The Thread of Liberty. Ned, how on earth did these people get a foothold inside the Democrat Party? And what is the plan to stop these people?
First of all, what a collection of losers. And you've been very clear about this, Jesse, and some of us have also been, they're not Democrat socialists, they're commies.
They've gotten a foothold because they've been allowed a foothold. It's very much the establishment embraced these people as they thought, we're going to make an unholy alliance with the hard left, the commies, to give ourselves political power. Because you and I both know the whole purpose of the Democratic Party, their whole moral code, ethics, everything is built around, we must have political power. That's everything is oriented towards that. So they'll make unholy alliances even with communists, if they think it will lead them to power. The problem being, communists are never going to settle for second best. They're going to continue to take out establishment and strive to the point where they're in power, where they're in charge. And so I think this has been going on for a while. I would make the argument, Jesse, if you go back and look at the Communist Party in the 1970s, I keep on thinking about G. William Domhoff, who part of the Communist Party, who actually became a tenured professor inside the California university system. But he wrote in the Ramparts magazine back in the 1970s, it's time for the Communist Party to start running inside the Democratic Party instead of being a third party, because a party is what people say it is. And the people who say what it is are those that run in primaries and show up at conventions. And so you could make an argument this really started 50 years ago, but you know, this younger generation is one of the reasons I did the documentary. You're never going to defend what you despise. And our younger generations have gone through these indoctrination centers of higher learning, and they have been taught to despise this country, that it's evil, you know, evil empire, that the founding is illegitimate, our founding documents, everything about it. It's not only not worth defending, in fact, in their thinking, it's the moral imperative to destroy it, to bring in a new, more moral, ethical order, which, of course, we know every time communists seize power, it becomes a bloodbath and a complete and total disaster for society.
Ned, it's obvious that foreigners are part of the plan to keep these communists in power in the country, because Americans overall are rejecting these ideas, but foreigners do not. Mamdani is mayor of New York, and he knows exactly why he's mayor of New York City, because of foreigners. Foreigners elected him, and Americans rejected him. So that brings me to one of the leading candidates for the governor of Red Oklahoma. Here's Gentner Drummond. Here he is.
If you're an illegal immigrant in Oklahoma and obeying the law, I don't have any concern for you, and I wish you to have success as you work through the process of legally immigrating.
Ned, how on earth are there still Republicans like this when it's so obvious what I just said is true about foreigners?
There's something in the water in Oklahoma. If it's producing guys like James Lankford, Stitt, this guy, I would even argue Mark Wayne Mullen, there's something very wrong with the Republican Party in Oklahoma. And this to me, again, also something that's been building for a long time, Jesse, this our broken immigration system. I don't even know if you can call it a system, but whatever we want to call what's been going on with immigration has been, again, another unholy alliance between Democrats and their desire for political power and these Chamber of Commerce type Republicans who are looking for cheap labor. And you're seeing this continue on in certain states that, like Oklahoma, I would even argue South Carolina, there's some deep red states in which there's something in the water in which they're turning out these Republicans like this who don't seem to know what time it is. And going back to your earlier point, you know, there is a purpose to the systematic invasion that took place under the Biden administration, in which they are seeking to import new voters that will do what they want to, who will make, they'll make, you know, part of the welfare state, make them, you know, part of the patronage system in which they will be loyal supporters of the Democratic Party in hopes that it leads to a single party system. And there have been Republicans that continue to play along. I would say in response to this, until we fix whatever you call our immigration system, we should probably have a moratorium on all immigration until we actually get it fixed and figure out what we want to do moving forward, and then have a very limited merit-based immigration system that benefits us as a country. And I will say this, merit-based will reduce, it would be a significant reduction in the legal immigration if I had my way.
Ned, tell me about the threat of liberty. Let's talk about something wonderful.
Yeah, no, I wanted to do something for the 250th anniversary, Jesse. Last year, I'm going to do something that celebrates the great American Republic, that embraces, you know, our founding, the founding documents, that really gives us a moment to sit back and reflect on just what an incredible miracle. I mean, Ken Burns, who's not exactly a conservative, said one of the most important events, if not the most important event in world history, since the birth of Christ was the American Revolution and the founding of the Republic. And we should embrace that. We should look at this and go, what an incredible moment in time in which a collection of intellectual giants were in the right place at the right time to put together the most exquisite political document, the Constitution, to give us a constitutional republic. And, you know, we use Tocqueville, Alexis de Tocqueville, as a little bit of a backdrop to tell this story. And he made some really interesting observations, Jesse. One, when he came, young French nobleman, he didn't think liberty and faith would somehow be friends. He thought they'd be at odds, and he found they were intertwined. In fact, he made the observation that America's first political institution was religion. And so we discuss, you know, republics are very fragile things. And the founders understood for a republic to continue on, there must be a virtuous people. We have to learn how to govern ourselves before we can govern others. And so a self-governing republic is based off virtue. And John Adams, George Washington, very clear on this front, that virtue comes from religion. And of course, the religion at that time was traditional Christianity. But the other point Alexis de Tocqueville makes, and we close out with some of this, it's time for a rebirth of instinctive patriotism, that inborn love of country because it's our country. And we should be proud of it. Have we been perfect? No. But Tocqueville makes this point. America has this great ability to repair her faults. And so we've had a little bit of a zigzag path. We've had our share of faults, but we always seem to be able to repair them. And we should not be ashamed of this country. We should love this country. And so the threat of liberty is at these various inflection points. There's a generation that still felt an obligation to the experiment, that grabbed hold of that threat of liberty, because they felt an obligation to the previous generation and the ones coming after, and said, I will be a steward of liberty and I'll make sure that I pass it on to the next generation. And I think we're in that another inflection point right now in this current day, in which we are up against an administrative state. We're up against a whole lot of threats. And the question is, will we find the political courage and will to continue holding on to that threat of liberty? And we're going to have to go somewhere deep within to find that will and that courage, but I think it's worth the fight.
Amen, it is. It is the thread of liberty. I would highly recommend you go check it out. It's wonderful. Thank you, Ned. I appreciate you, brother. Are Democrats going to win in the midterms? Let's ask Mark Halperin about that in a moment. Before we ask Mark about that, let me ask you, do you have high interest debt and a mortgage? I know. It's overwhelming, isn't it? Oh, my gosh, I'm paying 20%, paying 30%, making the minimum payments. What do I do? I'm never going to get out of it. Would hold on that. American financing has been getting people just like you out of it for a very long time. This is what they do. You may have convinced yourself that your story is unique. Oh, but Jesse, you don't understand how much. No. This is what they do. They help people out just like you. You don't have to live with this the rest of your life. Go to AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse and find out what they can do for you. AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse. We'll be back. Well, because I'm a political nerd and you're a political nerd, I've been thinking about the midterms since about 5 minutes after Donald Trump won the election in November. And I think, told you before, I think we're probably going to have a rough go of it in the House. I think we'll be okay in the Senate because we have Nazi rapists dropping out of the race in Maine and things. But I don't want to think about it. I want to know. Mark Halperin is one of the most wired in political people I've ever watched in my entire life. He has a show Next Up with Mark Halperin. Okay, Mark, you can give me comfort or you can just dump all over me. How are the midterms looking?
I mean, I think you have it pretty close to right. It'd be mathematically and politically very difficult for Republicans to keep the House. And some analysts and some Republican consultants will tell you if things don't get better, you could lose a lot more seats than most people are talking about. Some districts that President Trump won by 10 points could be in play, maybe. The Senate side is still a firewall of just the nature of the races that are in place. And I still think it's possible that Republicans will gain a seat if all things break their way rather than lose the majority. So, still have time to play out here. Still want to see what happens with Iran, with inflation, with how voters are feeling about things. But Republicans have some advantages going into this that are, I think, underappreciated, including more money and the ability to coordinate the spending of that money.
Okay, Margaret, let's actually start with that, the issues you just brought up. I obviously, political people have their own way of voting, but they're not the ones who decide elections. Why are the headwinds so strong against the GOP now heading into the midterms, because a hardcore right winger like me looks at the insanity of the Democrat Party and says to himself, surely Americans won't go vote that way. But most Americans aren't hardcore political people. What is pushing them left?
Three things primarily. First of all, is the historical reality that, with two exceptions in the modern era, the party that controls the White House loses seats in the midterms, and sometimes quite a few. Voters just often want to send a check to say, I can think of all the things the president's done that I don't like more than I remember the things I do like. So that's number one. It's just the historical truth, with the two exceptions that were kind of exceptional years, one after Bill Clinton's impeachment when the public recoiled against that, and two after 9/11 and President Trump's rallying of the country. Second is the president's approval rating and the mood of the country feels like things are going in the wrong direction. Those are not in great shape. They're not the worst ever, but they're far from the best ever. And if you extrapolate those numbers to how many seats Republicans, or the incumbent party rather, has lost in the past, it would be quite a shellacking. And lastly is inflation. You know, we've been in tough economic times before, but the last 5 years or so of inflation really means a lot to a lot of people in the country. And it reinforces the long-term economic anxiety that people have, and over loss of jobs and inability to afford a home, inability to afford college, and now in concerns about AI. And inflation is so insidious. And President Trump's not responsible for all the inflation that exists by any means. And a lot of it occurred on Joe Biden's watch. But people are still looking to send a message to the party in power to say, you got to do better on inflation than you've done.
What does country heading in the wrong direction mean? Because you and I both know this question gets asked of people forever. This question has been asked of people, but it's not, can't just be one thing. What do people mean when they say the country's heading in the wrong direction?
Well, for a lot of people, it's economic. For some of the issues I talked about, it correlates closely to the question, will your kids and grandkids have the same economic opportunity you've had? Most Americans now say no, and that's a change from decades of this optimistic country, with people believing, with good data to base it on, that their kids and grandkids will have better opportunity rather than worse. So part of it's economic. I think part of it is cultural. Part of it is just the whether you're on the left or you're right, or the right, there's a lot going on out there. Trans athletes playing in girls and women's sports for people on the right. For people on the left, they don't like Donald Trump, and they think as long as Donald Trump's president, by definition for them, the country's going in the wrong direction. And then I think for a lot of people, it's paradoxically the divisions in the country. Even if they're themselves highly partisan, they just don't like the intensity, feeling like we're in a civil war of sorts. So I think those are the main contributors to why people feel pretty dark currently about the United States, even as so much about America is going well, and even as people might be pleased with some individual things that are going on.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's exactly where I was going next. All the numbers show that the GOP is still trusted more on crime, understandably. The GOP is still trusted more on the border, immigration, understandably. But if you tell me we're about to take a pasting in the midterms, or might, then doesn't that tell me those issues don't drive people right now?
Well, the lead for the party is smaller than it was before.
Okay.
And this election, every election, people will tell you the economy is the biggest issue, and it almost always is. It's so dominant this cycle. Talk to any pollster, strategist who've done great campaigns over the course of many cycles, many decades in some cases. They've never seen the number one issue, economics, cost of things, struggling to get by. They've never seen it so dominant as it is compared to the issues lower down. So there are a lot of issues where the president's party is perceived to be stronger, but not in the economy. And I continue to see poll after poll that must pain the president, where people rate the Biden economy better than the Trump economy.
Oh, God have mercy. All right, let's focus on something positive for a minute. You said we might pick up a Senate seat. Where would that be and why?
Well, there's three Democratic-held Senate seats that could go Republican. New Hampshire, Michigan, and Georgia. And I believe, although the conventional wisdom is that Republicans will lose all three, I believe they could win any of the three, and maybe more than one. And then if you look at the the Democratic pickup possibilities outside of North Carolina, none of them are considered right now to be a sure thing. That would include Alaska, Texas, Iowa, Ohio, North Carolina, and Maine. I think North Carolina is the only one that Democrats feel really good about, and most Republicans I talk to are conceding as of now. All the rest, you know, varying degrees of plausibility, but not a sure thing. And unlike House races, which tend to be the subject of national trends, Senate races make their own wind and weather. They're pretty independent. And if you go to each of those, Republicans have an argument to be made that they can hold their seat. With the exception of Maine, they're all states President Trump won, and in most cases, he won by a lot. And it's difficult to win a Senate seat these days in a race won by a presidential candidate of the other party.
Is Maine lost for them now that Graham Plattner flamed out in spectacular fashion? Is it just lost now? I know Susan Collins allegedly has wonderful constituent services, good campaigner, good fundraiser, but Maine should not have a Republican senator, so is it safe?
So when you say, is it lost now, do you mean lost for Susan Collins or lost for the Democrats?
For the Democrats.
I wrote a piece this morning for the Free Press. I think until we see what kind of candidates the Democrats nominate in this 2-week sprint to replace Plattner, I don't think we should say Collins is going to lose. I look at these folks, they don't look like titans. Normally to beat an incumbent, even someone like Susan Collins, who has some issues running as a Republican in a blue state, these look like folks who would struggle to make land a role in a dinner theater version of Pippin, as opposed to beating an incumbent presidential candidate. So I want to see who the Democrats pick. I want to see how far left this person is forced to go in order to win the nomination through this convention process. And then I want to see how they withstand several million dollars in negative ads right from the get-go, just as they're trying to stagger to their feet and claim the prize. Very akin to what happened with Kamala Harris. Taking over for somebody else right at the end of the campaign is a challenge. Now, Harris had an advantage. She got all the money she could keep that they'd already raised because she was on the ticket. She kept the campaign office. She kept most of the campaign staff. It was a relatively smooth transition. She'd already been part of the campaign. This person's going to have to step in after the next 2 weeks fighting other Democrats and do it all, build a structure. Plattner, as a matter of morality, as a matter of controversy, Plattner was a problem for the Democrats. But I think people have lost sight of all the things that Plattner brought to this that allowed him to win a contested primary against the popular Democratic governor in a landslide, so much so she basically quit the race. Plattner had a celebrity. He had a fundraising organization. He knew how to campaign around the state. He had name ID. I look at this Democratic field, and I think Democrats will have to be really lucky to pick the right person who can step in and get this thing humming in just a matter of weeks at the same time as Susan Collins and the killers who work for her, the political killers, really try to stop this person from getting legs under them.
Last one from me, Mark. You mentioned Kamala Harris. It boggles the mind that such an obviously bad candidate would possibly be the Democrat nominee again, but I can't ignore every single Democrat primary poll at this time that show her comfortably ahead. Is it going to be her?
No, look, you know, the famous Woody Hayes line, the reason Ohio State would always run the football is because when you pass, two things can happen and three things can happen and two of them are bad. Harris will either run and do poorly, run and do well, or not run. And two of those three lead to her not being the nominee. And I'd bet on those two over the third option as having a much higher probability. So I don't think she'll be the Democratic nominee, and I'm not that confident she'll run. I think she'll have trouble raising some kinds of money. She might do well in the grassroots fundraising. But look, just is a very weak field. It's the weakest field I've ever covered of forming a field of a presidential campaign for either party. And so she's one of the strongest half dozen, as many flaws as she has, because she's strong with Black voters. She has grassroots fundraising list. And she's run for president before. So you can't write her off. But like I said, I'd be surprised if she ended up as the party's nominee.
Mark, awesome. I appreciate you, brother. Come back.
Good to see you, man.
All right. We're going to talk to Riley Gaines. Speaking of trannies in women's sports, she's been pretty loud about that. Let's see if we're getting some wins there. Before we talk to Riley Gaines, let me give you a win for your life. Natural herbal supplements from CHOP. I am telling you, they will change your life for the better. When you start, give it 60 days. Give it 90 days. I personally take a male vitality stack. I've been taking it for 4 years. No needles in your arm. 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days. Clinically tested. You can have so much more energy. Such a better mood. Chuck.com/JesseTV will improve every part of your life. Go get some natural herbal supplements. We'll be back.
I hope for anyone who's sort of, struggling in this time and the headlines and just to know like that you're, not alone and loved and celebrated by so many. And try and block out the noise from, absolute vile losers who must just be so profoundly uncomfortable with themselves they can't handle that someone could get to a place that I think, trans people do get to, which is a level of self-acceptance and understanding that I think is really beautiful and profound.
I grapple with this, that our country, we take mentally ill people and we conduct medical experiments on them. I mean, have you heard of Unit 731, the Japanese? But, we don't have to go into it. It's a dark story. But we're doing that here in the United States of America. That is so incredibly sad. That was a cute young actress at one point in time. I saw the movie Juno. She was great. Now she's Frankenstein. Joining me now, Riley Gaines, host of the Riley Gaines Show. Riley, that is more sad than enraging to me that we took a pretty young girl and just, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, no, I feel the exact same way you do. I don't look at Ellen Page, goes by Elliot Page. I don't look at her and feel outrage or feel angry. No, I really feel like honestly, I feel a deep sense of empathy, which that word has been hijacked by the other side. They claim to be the ones that are empathetic and compassionate and kind and tolerant and loving and all of the buzzwords, but what I feel in my heart is the word empathy in its true connotation. I look at Elliot Page, now goes by Elliot Page, as someone who has been lied to, someone who has been manipulated, someone who has turned themselves into at once a beautiful girl, very small, very petite, like in no way, shape, or form manly, and has now transformed herself into something that, visibly looking at everything I see online of this person as someone who looks miserable. And it's just ironic in watching that clip. I hadn't yet seen that clip, Jesse, to hear someone like Paige talking about, self-acceptance, the irony there, because, and saying that people like me and you, we don't know how to accept ourselves. The irony there when their form of self-acceptance is irreversibly and chemically changing themselves to altering them to be something that they could never otherwise become. That isn't self-acceptance, that's self-denial. You have to deny yourself to become something else. In no way are you accepting who God created you to be. That's where my sense of empathy comes from.
Riley, did we fail? And I'm actually talking about me, those of us who are politically active. When I look at how pervasive this is, she's not some random case. There are thousands of these across the country, children, and I can't help but think we didn't do enough. That's what it feels like. It feels like we didn't do enough.
Yeah, I grapple with this too. Because the harm that's being done, it's real, it's destructive, and it, as I said, it's irreversible. I think especially when you look at the medicalization side of things, when you've got kids or adults for that matter who are cutting off healthy, functioning body parts, Like there are few things, I really say this, there are few things more sinister than that right there, and more profitable, by the way, than that right there. And so you look at the gender ideology movement as a whole and you ask yourself, have we done enough? But honestly, Jesse, I think there's a faction of society where there's nothing that you could do. There's no amount of information that you could present. There's no amount of you know, reassurance. They love that word affirmation, right? Again, what they're doing, the whole affirmation model is quite literally the opposite of affirmation. They are denying themselves. There's nothing that we could do for a certain faction of society that could ultimately convince them that men can't get pregnant, and that women don't need prostate exams, and that tampons don't belong in boys' bathrooms, and that men can't become women. They are so, and I think the scary part here is basically, in terms of elected representation, at least, there's an entire political party who feels too far gone. There's nothing you could do to the Democrats, elected Democrats, to left-leaning media. There's no amount of information you could present that would get them to change their mind, because for some reason that is beyond me, this is the hill that they've chosen to die on. I don't get it. Even look at James Tallarico in Texas. I thought maybe, you know, post the big red wave that we saw in 2024 following the election, that they would, you know, maybe recant or distance themselves from their previous voting records on all the gender ideology stuff. But that's not what they've done at all. They've leaned in, they've become more radical, and they put someone up in Texas who believes that God is non-binary and there are six genders. It's beyond me, Jesse.
It is beyond me too. For such a tiny sliver of the population, are they just simply trapped, Riley? They maybe some sane ones in a quiet moment having dinner with their wives. Maybe they want out, but they can't get out.
You know, I really don't think that majority. Again, I'll speak to elected representation here. I really don't think majority of people voting to put men in women's sports or to rid parents of their parental rights or to put men in women's prisons or in women's locker rooms, I don't actually think that they believe, because they're intelligent people. They are. Whether you like Gavin Newsom or not, he is intelligent. And I think that's the more concerning part, because they know what they're doing is destructive. I don't think he actually thinks that, you know, the 6'4" boy on the volleyball court with the girls who jumps, you know, 10 feet higher and slams the ball at 20 miles per hour faster. I don't think Gavin Newsom looks at that boy and thinks it's a girl. Not at all. I don't think he thinks that. But again, that's almost more concerning. Is that they know it, but even still, they're willing to continue forward. And you have to ask yourself again, why? Like, why is this the hill that you're choosing to die on? And I think it's because, and it's no shock that, you know, the usual bad actors, the Mom Donnies, the Gavin Newsom, the AOC, the Bernie Sanders, right? The oligarchs against capitalism, whatever, those people, they want to give President Trump a middle finger. I think that's what they think they're doing. They're like flipping off President Trump in this act of defiance, this brave act of defiance. But the reality is they're really not giving a middle finger to President Trump. They're giving a middle finger to every girl in their state or every girl in their district that they represent. But I don't think they see it like that at all.
Riley Gaines is smart. Thank you, Riley. I appreciate it. Come back. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And look, this, and maybe I know you're going to think, well, this is not lightening the mood. This is ugly. This is bad. No. The story actually has a really cool ending. Tourist, Yellowstone National Park, bison charges. Well, here's that one. Pretty good short area quickness for a big guy, older guy. Yes, he broke his hip. He's joking about it. He's all over social media telling jokes about the whole thing. So, bison are dangerous. Stay in your vehicle. Tough old man right there. I hope he gets better. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.